Welcome to the podcast. I want to tell you about something special we're doing this weekend. If you're a member of Blaze TV or if you listen to Blaze Radio Network, you're going to be hearing a marathon of Doc Thompson shows, The Morning Blaze. As you may have heard, Doc passed away this week, tragically, and there's a fundraiser going on for his family. He has three kids and a wife, and you know, obviously everything's in turmoil. So a lot of people were thinking about all the good times with Doc and all the great shows he did. And so we're going to be running a bunch of those this weekend and encouraging you to support him at his GoFundMe. You can get there easily. Go to helpdocthompson.com. And we really encourage you to do that if you have the ability. If not, you just listen and remember Doc Thompson this weekend. So this show today was an interesting one. We started with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her wonderful new Green Deal, which is really just an embarrassment. It is an embarrassment of riches for any conservative talk show host, and we go through some of that today. She's kind of a gift to us, to anyone who cares about the Constitution. She really illustrates the idiocy of socialism so well. And we get into the details there. You know, John Roberts with another terrible ruling in the Supreme Court. He's been an incredible disappointment. We go through that and his role in the Louisiana abortion law being overturned. Then we have Bill O'Reilly for a whole hour. This is a normal slot on Fridays in hour two. He goes through a new book he's writing about Donald Trump, which is going to be very interesting. He interviewed Donald Trump for an hour just last week, so he has some insight there. Goes into Nancy Pelosi and the Jeff Bezos story as well. And John Miller, who starts a new podcast up. You should listen to that. It's called White House Brief with John Miller. It starts this week. He is on Blaze TV as well. And he talks about the State of the Union and all the stuff going on in the White House. And Dr. Gad Saad as well from Canada, a really smart guy. He's in town doing a future podcast. So there's lots of really good material coming your way. And it all starts with today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I think what the Democrats are doing now may have a reverse effect on all of us. It may actually take people who have taken years off their life, may get them back. It's like Benjamin Button's. I may be younger at the end of this story. It's become a South Park parody. Alexandria Occasional Cortex has just made things fun. Here it is. She has finally unveiled to the world, via NPR, of course, the contents of her new Green Deal. I love this. Now, all the front runners, the Democrats who will run for president, whether they've read it or not, have already endorsed this. Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, all of them. So now what's in it? Well, I just want to give you some of the highlights. The Green New Deal proposes the following will be completed in the next 10 years. Are you ready? Do you in?
I'm very excited to hear. I'm sure it's all going to be very plausible.
No, it's not only plausible, it's the moral thing to do.
Oh, good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. A ban, now in the next 10 years, a ban on 99% of the cars currently on the road. Now, you think, what? No, this is no biggie. There are only an estimated 270 million registered cars out there. And I am sure that all 350 million Americans, you know, live in a place like Manhattan where a car really isn't needed. So you just get rid of your car unless you're in that 1%. Now, I don't know who that 1% is, but we know they won't be wealthy because we hate the richest 1%. But we will not hate the 1% that is allowed to have their cars and ours are taken from us. Okay, so she not only wants to ban all cars, she also, I don't want to be hyperbolic on this. I apologize to Mrs. Cortez. This is not all cars. It's only 99% of all cars. She also wants to ban all oil, all natural gas, and all nuclear power. Now, that's only about 80 to 90% of all the power that, you know, the country uses. But she doesn't ban coal, which is weird because coal is the dirtiest of all of them. Nuclear energy is the cleanest, and the next cleanest is natural gas. But oil, gone. Natural gas, gone. Nuclear power, gone in the next 10 years. How are we going to replace it? Don't ask that question. She's doing moral work, okay? Don't ask that question. Now, she also has proposed in her new Green Deal. Now, it doesn't sound extreme yet, does it, Stu? Does it sound silly?
Right now, it just seems really rational, based in completely pragmatic ways. I mean, this is simple, I think,
right.
So far.
So if you want to save the planet, yeah, of course, you're going to ban oil, natural gas, nuclear power. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
1, 2, and 3, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Okay. You're going to ban all cars, right?
Well, no, 99% of cars.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now, she has gone the extra. Now, this is because she's a thinker, all right? Remember that she said just the other day that Donald Trump was an incoherent speech. And it was like he never even thought about it or did his homework.
That is what she said, yes.
She's done her homework.
Mm-hmm.
She also wants every building in America to be gutted and rebuilt so that it can be outfitted with energy-efficient materials. Now, notice that she uses the word every right before building in America. Every building in America. So in the next 10 years, without cars and without energy, we're going to gut every building in America and rebuild it with energy efficient materials.
Now, if you were to do this, mm-hmm. of course, and you were to complete this task, all of the materials you use would be completely outdated. Is she aware of that? They would no longer be the top of the line efficient.
Oh yeah, yeah, they would. No, you don't have any energy. You're not innovating anymore. So these will be
okay. So this is
you can't make them anymore. But you're certainly not updating anything. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now she's got rid of the cars. We've rebuilt every building in America in the next 10 years. She has banned all oil, natural gas, nuclear power, and she says it doesn't go far enough. It doesn't go far enough. We also need to ban all air travel.
All air travel?
Yeah, just ban
shut down the industry, or
yeah, just ban the planes. Don't know more planes.
Is this a joke?
No, it is not. Oh my gosh, you are so immoral. You are so immoral for not. Are you thinking, how do we do this? This isn't possible. No one will do this. You know, there's a difference between being right and being moral, Stu.
There sure is, as she's explaining here. But I don't. Not only do I not think it's possible to do these things, I don't want to do these things.
I don't think anyone would want. You tell the American people, we're going to take your car. Now, remember, this Kamala Harris has endorsed this plan. Elizabeth Warren has endorsed this plan. Cory Booker has endorsed this plan. All of them endorse this plan. Get rid of all cars. Get rid of natural gas, oil, nuclear power. Gut every single building in America and rebuild it. And ban all air travel. Now, sure, we're going to miss our plane rides, but have no fear. She has a solution for that. We're going to ban all air travel because we're going to have a massive amount of high-speed rail. And that will fulfill all of your travel needs.
How are you getting from the train station to the house? If there's no cars,
stop asking these immoral questions.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Now, I thought before when I was living in sin and I wasn't so moral, I thought, how that's going to suck for tourism in Hawaii or, you know, going to London or Europe.
It's going to be a long ride and a wet ride.
And a very wet ride. Mm-hmm. but it's on high speed train, so it probably can go underneath the ocean and get there so fast the train doesn't have time to, you know, trap people in a tube of water.
Oh, okay, that's the plan. It'll be that high speed.
I don't know, but
why do they always, they're so in love with 1900s technology. Like, hey, you know what we want to do is put it, we want trains. We want trains to go to the places, essential areas where the people may or may not live.
Is there anything that makes you more happy than this sound?
Yes.
I mean, it really kind of makes it feel like old-timey and kind of cool, you know? Oh, it'd be great. Okay, so ban all air travel as well. But this is the thing. Because we're doing all this, the government can guarantee jobs for life. Also, a free house, free education for life, guaranteed income. And I'm quoting, whether the person will work or not. Oh, and free healthy food for every American. This is fantastic.
I love that, too. That's all in a section entitled Build on FDR's Second Bill of Rights by Guaranteeing. And then she lists all these things, including a job with a family sustaining wage, family and medical leave, vacations, and retirement security. But remember, we didn't pass FDR's Second Bill of Rights. So this is on top of that.
Yeah, the Second Bill of Rights was to reverse the Constitution to a charter of negative liberties to a charter of positive liberties. Yep. The things that the government must do for all of humanity, not the things that the government must never do. And by doing a Second Bill of Rights, we follow the Soviet Constitution, which, by the way, the Soviet Constitution was changed I don't know how many times. Over and over and over again, because it doesn't work. Now, she admits that this isn't a perfect plan. She said, we're not going to get to zero emissions. And I want to pause for a minute, because the healing factor is about to be sprung loose. And you're going to feel so much better, because she's really thought this one through. She says, we can't do it without this. What is that?
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Wait a minute. This can't be right. John Roberts? John Roberts voted against the conservatives on abortion? What?
It is impossible to overstate how worthless John Roberts is. It's impossible. You can't overstate it. You cannot overstate it. He is worthless.
No. He's working on a long-term plan.
Oh, that's what we always get told. Yeah. Every time Roberts would come out and he has the wrong ruling on something, it's always, he's actually working on a long-term plan. It's going to be even better.
We really have a problem with the press, too, the way they report this, that he sided with the liberal side of the court. No.
Why don't you say that about Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Ruth Bader Ginsburg sided with the liberal side of the court. He's just on the liberal side of the court. That's it. He's just on that side. That's what he is. This idea, all the crap that came up with Kavanaugh, like they're going to overturn Roe versus Wade. They'd be lucky if they're within three justices of overturning Roe versus Wade. This law in Louisiana is completely consistent with Roe versus Wade. It fits absolutely in the middle of the structure that was set up by Roe versus Wade, and they still overturned it. It's absolutely, if you are a liberal and you are concerned about Roe versus Wade going away, there are 179 million other things you should worry about first. They can't even get a basic restriction passed to make it safer for women to have abortions. They can't even get that done. I mean, he is a disgrace, man. What a disappointment. John Roberts sucks.
That's my professional legal opinion. Was appointed by a Bush.
Yep. Now, again, Alito's been pretty good, and he was right on this. Kavanaugh, by the way, on the right side of this one, as well as Gorsuch, and, of course, Clarence Thomas.
He'll change. Give him 5 years, and he'll be...
And Kavanaugh's already 1-for-2 here on this, so you can't get too excited about Kavanaugh
yet. Gorsuch may actually be a real deal. Kavanaugh's not. If Donald Trump gets another chance, we must not allow him to deviate from that original list.
Which Kavanaugh was a deviation.
Yes, he was.
Not on the original list, to remind everybody.
He was.
Now, Kavanaugh may, you know, it's too early to judge Kavanaugh. We don't know. It's not too early to judge Roberts. Both Alito and Clarence Thomas are very strong, and Gorsuch looks to be very strong. Though it's still probably too early to even judge Gorsuch, honestly, at this point. But he's been, I've seen no signs of worry with Gorsuch yet. But this is like, so, the, you know, Roe versus Wade goes through. And in there, they say, first of all, it's first-term abortions. You could, that is, you know what, you can't really restrict that. The states can't restrict first-term abortions. After the first term, they can start restricting it with health of the mother type stuff. Mm-hmm. And then after viability, which is, you know, basically their alignment was the third term of that, which is, of course, not even true anymore because now viability is much earlier than 28 or 24 weeks, which they said at the time. But that was they said you could ban it after that period. The funny thing about it, though, when you read Roe versus Wade, what it says is the reason why you can have abortions and not restrict them in the first trimester is because it's healthier for the mom. The idea that having an abortion is healthier than having a child because you can die more frequently from having a child than from having an abortion.
Don't you know it, Jebediah?
Yeah. I know. What year is this?
Right.
Also, by the way, it's the entire thing is about health of the mother. Right. Like even there's never been, I mean, at least in Roe versus Wade, there is no, hey, you can have an abortion for any reason at any time. They say in the first trimester you can because this bizarre idea that no one has ever in the entire life of humanity has ever done, which is, well, you know what? There's a 0.008% chance I'll die during childbirth, and there's a 0.001% chance I'll die during an abortion. So for that incredible difference in health, I'm going to make the choice for the abortion.
Well,
that literally never occurs.
Okay, anymore. The progressives are so anti-progress. Always, mm-hmm. They're anti-progress. Look, you could have said that in the 1800s. Women did fear childbirth because you would die. It was the second leading cause of death for women. The first being burning to death.
Fun times.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't worry. They're going to come back if Ocasio-Cortez, you know, gets her way of banning oil, natural gas, and nuclear energy. We're all going to be cooking on a fire. So they did fear it back then, but you don't fear it in America today.
No, I mean, it's ridiculous. And plus, no one makes the decision that way. The other part of this is they even talk about it in the ruling where if they know that line's going to move, the viability line is going to move. It's now at what, 20 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
So we're already in Roe versus Wade. They were talking about 28 weeks and 24 weeks. We're already at 20 weeks when it comes to viability, and that's going to get younger and younger and younger. And by the way, Roe versus Wade specifically says this includes artificial means. So it's not just like the baby's born and will it live on its own, because it includes life-saving apparatus by the medical community.
You know
how close are we? I mean, we're already
we're so close. We're so close. Listen. Here's the thing. I don't know how it's going to happen. I really don't. But I am feeling strongly that there are several people all over the world that have been put in position to do several things. And it's all going to start launching soon. I really believe it. Last night, we saw the movie Unplanned. And I did not want to go. I did not want to go.
No, because, did not. Well,
right.
I mean, you were interested, but...
I was really interested.
It's you know, one of these... You get a little bit of that face of what you're making right now, which is the, oh, no, it's another Christian movie face.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, understandable, because sometimes they suck really badly. Oh, not as bad as John Roberts, but they're sometimes they're terrible.
So, and it's not that it's a Christian movie. It's that we're blowing our opportunity. We make these movies and then we make them so preachy and so Christian-y that only Christians go. And you can't bring somebody who's not a Christian or, you know, not like, you know, going to church three times a week. And so it defeats the goal of let's spread the word. So I thought, oh boy, this is bad. And Steve Dace came in And he said, I've had that feeling in the first 5 minutes of this movie, but then it went away. So I looked at him 5 minutes. I said, have we hit that part yet? And he said, you know, it's actually playing differently the second time I've seen it. He said, I don't feel this way. Now, it did feel like a smaller budget film at times, you know, because you weren't working with the A-list actors and actresses. But I thought the acting was really good. Mm-hmm. I thought the woman who played Abby Johnson,
she's
was
awesome. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Halfway through that film, I was overwhelmed with a feeling I might see in my lifetime the end of abortion in America. I've never felt that way, ever. And I think that there are things that are going on right now, and they are so overplaying their hand on everything. I want to get rid of airplanes and 99% of all cars. That's insanity. Insanity. And only the insane will go down that road. They are revealing themselves for who they truly are because they are arrogant and naive, and they think everybody is with them. And they've never gotten out of their New York district. They don't know who Americans are. They know their cult of America. And but nobody's going to do that. And I think they're overplaying their hands with abortion so far. And when you see this movie, you will. They're saying they're playing it for teenage test audiences. And they said teenage girls are becoming militant anti-abortion. They said even teenage boys are reacting to this going, that is wrong. When you see it, you've never seen anything like it. And the power of this story is it's not a Hollywood script. It's true. Every word in it, when they're having the dialogue with the Planned Parenthood people, is an exact quote. Everything that you see happen is exactly what actually happens and happened to this woman, Abby Johnson.
And Abby Johnson's amazing. We've had her on the show before.
Yeah.
It's funny because you said this kind of a little bit after the movie, and you described this feeling of like, wow, maybe abortion's going away. And then that night, John Roberts is siding with the liberal side of the court to shoot down a Louisiana law that is absolutely consistent with Roe versus Wade. At this point, we are at a point in America where if we everyone's like, oh, don't overturn Roe versus Wade. A great improvement would be to go back to it. If we could just get this country to go back to where Roe versus Wade was, which was first term abortions, basically, that's it. Then states can restrict it based on health in the second trimester. That's exactly what the Louisiana law does. It says, hey, we got to have admitting. You have to have a physician with admitting privileges at a local hospital. And they said that's too restrictive, even though specifically carved out in the Roe versus Wade ruling, which was a terrible ruling, but is way more conservative than what we have now. That has been these rights have been expanded and expanded and expanded and expanded. And the idea that going back to one of the worst legal rulings in American history is an improvement. It puts me on the exact opposite side of the feeling I had right after the movie, which was, hey, there's a lot of hope.
I am impressed to tell you that everything we said, and this is all slotting into place with me in an amazing way. Everything we told you we had to do, it's now here. It's now here. Now is the time when I said you're going to need your credibility. Don't become extreme. Don't become combative. Don't lie. Don't spread fake things. Make sure you do your homework so you're not unwittingly doing that. You have to be credible because the world is not going to know which direction, and you're going to need to have that credibility. Right now is the time. If you still have your credibility, and if you don't, work on fixing it, because right now you can go peacefully to your friends and family and say, hey, I don't want to talk to you about politics. Let's just talk about the actual abortion bills. And here they are. Here's what happened. Here's Roe versus Wade. Let me show you what is happening to us. And we're now literally talking about killing children after birth. And I know that's not what the leadership is saying, but that is what the leadership is actually putting into practice and in law. And if you can have reasonable conversations with reasonable people on the Democratic side. But what's not going to work is bashing anymore and fighting over Trump. Don't do it. Let Trump fight his own battle. He is fine. There's nobody better at fighting battles for Donald Trump than Donald Trump. He doesn't need your help. He is fighting his battles. Fight the things that actually matter in the long run, because it's so polarized now. The minute you bring up Trump, it's over. It's over. You will not make any progress. So don't mention it. You can fight for Donald Trump in other ways, etc., but don't mention it with your friends. In fact, go the opposite direction and point out the things that you disagree with him on. Say, look, you disagree with him on everything. I disagree with him on some of the things, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about returning to common principles that we don't kill babies after birth. Well, we don't, and that's just a lie. No. Wait. I want to show you the actual law. I want to show you the actual lawmakers who are making this case on the Democratic side. They are doing things and lying to you because of a few radicals. I'm not against Democrats. I'm against the Democratic radicals who have hijacked your party. And there's a few of them. And here's what they're saying and doing.
One quick thing about Trump before we go.
Yeah.
People say he has a big ego. At least he's not putting his ego ahead of the lives of 60 million children, because that's what John Roberts is doing. He's putting his ego and his legacy above the lives of 60 million people who should be alive and are not because of this. And he continues to do this in big spots over and over again. He is worthless.
Yes. And egos always lose in the end. Yeah. Ocasio-Cortez, she put this out. And she obviously had sixth graders working on it with her.
Yep.
But she's so self-surrounded by people who are like, oh, this is great. She had the ego to put it out on writing. And even Nancy Pelosi is now running from it.
Yeah. So that's what is this green dream or whatever they're calling it.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Another book from Bill O'Reilly. Now, here's the good news. At least in this one, he's not killing someone. Bill O'Reilly, how are you?
What do you mean the good news? What does that mean?
Well, I mean they're just...
The eight killing books of 17 million copies in print. Come on.
And I remember you mocking me. All right. Bill O'Reilly.
Yes.
You were on an airplane, but not just any airplane on Friday.
No, last week I had to do the Beck program on Thursday because Friday I was fortunate enough, and I really believe fortunate is the best word, to ride down Florida with the President of the United States on Air Force One.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking around for Harrison Ford. He wasn't there, and I was happy, so there was not going to be any shootout on the plane.
Did you see the pod that he can escape with?
Yeah, listen, that thing, you can live in that thing. That's the biggest machine I've ever seen. It's got...
All right.
Here's how crazy it is.
Yes.
It has M&Ms with Trump's name on it.
I believe that.
So there you go.
All right. So tell me about the book that you're writing.
Okay. This is a history book. We're going to announce in a few weeks the title. I have a title in mind, but, you know, I'm giving the publisher a chance to come up with one as well. It's not a pro-Trump book. It's not an anti-Trump book. It's why he believes what he believes. And it's a complicated, he's a complicated guy. I've known him more than 30 years, so I'm probably the best guy to write the book because I'm not looking to hurt him and I'm not looking to help him. So I'm already writing it. And it's, I think, if you don't hate him, if you hate him, you don't want to read this. But if you're curious about him and you like him or like him, you're going to want to read it.
Going to be a big book, Bill.
I think so.
Yeah. You'll finally be able to retire.
It's a hard book to write. I was writing it last night and banging my head against the wall. Here's why it's hard. He doesn't want you to know about this stuff. See, most people, they like talking about their childhood. I mean, I know you love talking about your time in reform school and how, you know, you were incarcerated for most of your childhood.
Well, I was kept in an iron lung.
He doesn't want that. And it was so hard to interview him about it because we're sitting in the office. He's got a big office on the plane. But in front of him is this giant TV screen.
Did you just turn it off?
No.
Oh, he's...
And Fox News is on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So his eyes keep darting, particularly when the Chiron mentions his name, mm-hmm. onto the screen. I've got to focus him back.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to bring him back to the 1950s. Trump was born in 1946. And to have him describe what his childhood was like, his father and mother, his four siblings, his neighborhood, and how that all affected him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, it's like the dentist. At one point, he didn't want to do this at all. He only did it because I'm so annoying and he's known me for a long time, okay? So he looks at me, he goes, "Where's Melania? Where's my wife? Get her in here." So instantly, Melania Trump appears in the office and he looks at me, he goes, "He's torturing me. He's torturing me just like he did on television." "Tell him to stop." And Melania is like this frozen smile. Doesn't say a word. Doesn't say anything. Just looks at him, looks at me, and vanishes. Boom, she's gone. And I go, "Can we just get this over with?" You know, because that was the last thing on earth he wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Now, I did get an hour of stuff. And some of it is fascinating. But the rest of it is our researchers. And did you know that his father, who he idolized, pulled him out of the Shishi school in Queens and sent him to military school?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right.
Do you know about his uncle? Are you going to include the stuff on his uncle?
His uncle was an MIT person.
His uncle was an MIT guy. His uncle was the guy, and this really comes from when Donald Trump says, you know, "I come from the best stock and, you know, I just a brilliant family." It comes really from his uncle, who is at MIT, but his uncle was selected by the government when Nikola Tesla died to go in and look at all of the papers of Nikola Tesla and which one should be kept by the government and which ones shouldn't be kept, and they could go to his home country. So he was the guy.
The uncle didn't have any influence, really, on Donald Trump. It was all the father, and the father wasn't there very much. But we get into it, and I'll just give your audience just how different this book's going to be. His father was arrested at a Klan rally.
Oh, boy.
And nobody knows any of this. And I asked him about it. I asked Donald Trump about it. When his father was a young man, his grandfather, Trump's grandfather, went up to Alaska in the Klondike Gold Rush. There's so much in there that nobody has any blanket clue, because the books that Trump wrote about himself were all about
him,
the real estate business, mm-hmm. you know, all of that. Nothing about what he did as a kid and how it all, and his sister, of course, 8 years old, is a federal judge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fascinating study. I think at the time is right for a history book on President of the United States. Let's knock the myths out and get to the real person.
All right. That's Bill O'Reilly. When's the book coming out, Bill?
Probably September.
Okay.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Blaze White House correspondent John Miller, what is it like to sit in that room? What is it that you see that nobody else sees, John?
I think it is the disdain for the average American, to be quite honest. I think that you see the conversations you hear happen when people think either you're not listening or people think that you're like-minded would genuinely shock Americans. I mean, everything from them saying that, you know, this administration just, you know, was trying to keep the brown people out of the country, to the fact that the president works a cult, to, I don't know if everyone remembers, but the president spoke to a room full of black students. It was, I think, 400 students. And reporters from major outlets, not, you know, crew, but actual reporters, rolling their eyes, saying this is a waste of everyone's time. The president speaking to one of the largest groups of black people to visit the White House, more so than Obama had. People rolling their eyes, saying this is a waste of time. I can't believe we had to sit through this. Can we just get through it? It's incredible. They think that everyone thinks exactly like them, and therefore they are unfiltered in what they say, and that is very revealing.
I felt the same way when watching the State of the Union, the arrogance of the left. They know they have cover from the mainstream media, and they get away with murder. I mean, they really do. The attitude in the State of the Union, the hissing that went on, the laughing that went on. They were taking selfies during the State of the Union. It was so incredibly disrespectful to the process, to the country, to the president. I was shocked by it. And I don't, you know me, John, I don't think highly of these people.
Yeah, I mean, you say they were hissing. Like, that's not, you're not exaggerating. They were actually hissing during the speech.
No, they were hissing twice. They hissed.
And what's also incredible, I saw on Twitter, and Jonah Goldberg, surprisingly, is saying that he found it incredibly tawdry that people were chanting USA during the speech, which, I mean, that was one of the least offensive things, I think, during the speech that happened during the audience. It's the USA chanting.
I thought it was interesting because USA, USA was about, you know, job growth
No, it's about women, right?
No. The first one, there was a first one, and I think it was either about job growth or the military, and only the right said USA, USA. Then when they did women, the women, Ocasio-Cortez led everybody standing up, USA, USA, USA. That was about women. But both sides of the House were proud of that women were, you know, at the highest work level that they've ever been. I think that's something that we could debate, whether our homes are any better because of it, whether our children are any better because of it. But everybody was shouting USA, USA. But when it came to something that was another real uniting concept, they didn't do that.
They didn't cheer. No. And it's incredible. Notice how they sat for abortion. You know, it was right after women's accomplishments in the workplace, and then it came to late term abortion, and they sat. And I think it really just showed you the disparity between the representatives, who really just reflect a fringe left group, maybe some special interests, and the American people. Because you look at the numbers for people who want a late-term abortion ban, it's 80% of women. And the number of people who support abortion bans is actually going up. So they're wildly out of step with the American people. The same thing also goes for immigration. I mean, you know, it was definitely divided down the middle when it came to the president's remarks on immigration. But the American people are much more unified on that matter. So it was interesting when the president said he wants to give a unifying speech. I think he did that. I think the reason why it wasn't unifying was because of the representatives who are representing something that the vast majority of the American people don't believe in, i.e. socialism.
So, I mean, John, you were with me during the whole time at Fox. And you started with me, I think shortly before that time, and you were going to Columbia University, and you were a conservative and African-American and tight-lipped. You didn't say anything. If I recall, you didn't say anything until the very last day. And I advised you not to say anything.
Yeah.
You were with me at those times, and you know how radical they were, and how bad things got behind the scenes and the things that they were willing to do and say. I think they're worse right now. I think
absolutely.
Is much worse, and that
absolutely.
Was bad.
Yeah, I mean that's I would dream to have those days back because
yeah.
You know they were, you know, they were just big government people. And you know, they believed that government was the solution to a lot of things. I mean, now they're just bat crap crazy to the point where I'm wondering, is this an act? I mean, you look at the Green New Deal that they're pushing, which, you know, I'm sure you've discussed. I mean, that it's not, and these are people who, I mean, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is not, you know, she went to Boston University. Apparently, from what I've heard, she did well there. You know, she grew up in New York, so it's not like she's out of touch with with everyday life.
She has a degree in economics from BU. So how could this?
That's my question.
Yeah.
She has to know that. I mean, they want to eliminate planes, and I mean, this is someone who has to travel for a living. She's trying to get rid of planes. It's unrealistic, and anyone with a brain and common sense knows this is not going to work. So I'm really at the point where I'm wondering, are they just saying this stuff? Because we're in the age of social media. You can say anything. And five presidential candidates are getting behind it. You can just say anything. It doesn't matter if you get it done. You know, I'm worried that the president now is just saying, you know, we're going to build this wall. And, you know, and whether or not he's going to get done is still up in the air. But I'm at the point where, are they just saying this stuff because they know it will rile up the base? There's no way any – these are not, you know – complete idiots. I mean, some would argue against me on that. But these are people that have to understand that what they are proposing in this thing is completely outrageous.
I would contend, John, that that's not the case because they've never had pushback. When you say a crazy idea and nobody pushes back, your idea, you're like, okay, well, everybody thinks that's good. You know, I also think in this, and you get crazier and crazier, and everybody is, if no one is pushing back, and you are getting to be a bigger, bigger star, you start to believe that all of your ideas are great and you don't have to back any of them up.
Yeah, it's like a toddler with a parent who spoils their kid and just says, you know, oh, everything you do is wonderful, everything is great. And, you know, that kid turns out to be a complete disaster because they've never been told that that's not a good idea and you shouldn't do that. But it's gotten to the point now where we're not talking about ideological differences. We're talking about sane versus completely outrageously insane.
John Miller is on with us, host of the White House Brief on Blaze TV, also a podcast starting here really soon. Was it start today, John, or is it this week?
It started yesterday. What it is it is a podcast version of the White House Brief. So we do, 5 to 10 minute video every day. We're turning that into a podcast, and we're going to keep an extended portion on it. So, you know, I usually cover one topic in the White House Brief. What we're going to do is then kind of develop the idea. So whether it's go into a whether it's go deeper into a subject or, you know, talk about some of the other big stories that are important coming out of the White House each day, or sometimes it might even be stuff that's not even White House related, because there's so much crazy stuff in the news right now. For instance, there, you know, we were going to do some interviews, and actually, I recently wrote a piece on how I think Black History Month is completely useless at this point, needs to be eliminated.
And by the way, John is an African American.
Yes, yeah. Just put that out there. I think another Blaze writer, Aaron Colon, wrote an article, brilliant, and it's a great article. It's a great rebuttal to my piece. He completely disagrees with me. I'd love to have him on to debate that. I mean, I think we both raised legitimate points, and you know, that is absolutely what we're trying to do here at Blaze TV. Is you know, we're not Stalinists. We can accept diversity of thought, and we can hash out those ideas in a friendly, respectful, and fun way. And so I'd love to do some of that. And so on the podcast White House Brief, we're going to be doing some more exploration and extending it a bit so that we can cover some of these topics in a bit more depth.
And John, because you're in the middle of DC, you're dealing with these people every single day. Let me take your temperature on this idea. Ocasio-Cortez, she's a socialist. And yes, she believes, I think, most of the stuff that every Democrat believes but doesn't admit. But the thing with Ocasio-Cortez is she's not just a socialist, she's an embarrassing socialist. Right? Like, she's constantly making these gaffes and making this ideology look silly. And to me, I wonder, how long is the leash here when they, at some point, I feel like Democrats get so embarrassed by her, they put her, quote unquote, back in her place. Pelosi puts her back in her place.
I think it's insane, because you would think that as a rational thinking person, you would think that, but that's not what we're seeing happening.
No.
I mean, Glenn mentioned I went to Columbia University. I have very many liberal friends at Columbia University who, you know, are educated and have many, many degrees, some of them, and they love her. They think she's the greatest. And I don't understand how someone who appears not to understand basic economics and, you know, all the way down to how our government functions, to the point where, she can't name the three branches of government and thinks that there are three chambers of Congress. I mean, there are gaps in her knowledge, and she's not interested. She's not curious. And yet the left educated people on the left love her, and you see the politicians who you would think would kind of try to get her out of the way and say, you know, this is kind of crazy, let's kind of ignore her. They're endorsing her proposals. Cory Booker's coming endorsing her proposals. Kamala is too. So, you would think that at some point people would say she's embarrassing, let's get her out of the party. I will tell you, I hear in Washington, D.C., when you hear people chattering and all the buzz, there are elements within the Democrat Party that are very upset with her because she doesn't work with them, and she doesn't work with the establishment Democrats, and that is upsetting a lot of staffers on the Hill. So what they are doing is now I hear whispers of people trying to orchestrate a way to get her and the other radical Democrats who are kind of on her team out, and they are trying to work and find a way to get them out of office. So I'd be very curious to see if her time in Congress lasts long, because there are still very powerful elements of that caucus that are trying to get her out.
This is the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
I am thrilled to be able to sit down here in just a few minutes with Dr. Gad Saad from Concordia University. He's a professor of evolutionary behavioral science. He's got to spend some time talking down because I understand about a third of what he's saying, but he is fascinating. We had dinner last night. I wanted to bring him in before we record the podcast just for a few minutes. To kind of introduce him to you in case you don't know who he is. He's big online, very, very funny on Twitter. Welcome. How are you?
Oh, so nice to be here. Thank you for having me, Glenn.
So you study evolutionary psychology.
Indeed.
Okay. Is that, please excuse my ignorance, but is that like why we become so tribal?
That would be one manifestation of our evolutionary imperatives.
Okay.
You know, social scientists are perfectly happy to accept that our opposable thumbs arose out of evolution and that our liver arose out of evolution. But they reject the idea that the thing that defines us, our personhood, our minds, are due to evolution. And so what evolutionary psychologists do is simply apply the lens of evolutionary theory to explain our emotional system, our cognitive system, why we think the way we do, why we act the way we do. And so it's simply applying the evolutionary framework to the study of human behavior.
So we could either go to politics or consumerism.
Sure.
Where do you want to start on that?
We can do consumer behavior since that's the place where I've most applied
it. Okay, all right.
So I'll give you maybe just to make it very tangible, I'll give you a few examples of actual studies that I've done, and that'll just give the audience a clear sense of what I do. So I did a study with one of my former graduate students where we looked at how the menstrual cycle affects women's behaviors. So, for example, how they dress.
Can you even say this in today's world?
Well, you can't even say that there's such a thing as men or women.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean, I'm Satan, basically.
I know. Okay.
I'm way beyond having violated every tenet.
Right.
And so what we basically did is we tracked women's behaviors, preferences, desires over 35 contiguous days. 35 days because the average menstrual cycle lasts for 28 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we showed that during the maximally fertile phase of a woman's menstrual cycle, when she's actually in the ovulatory phase, this is when she dresses most sexily. Now, she doesn't do that consciously, but it turns out across many animal species, there are very clear signs when females enter into estrus. Now, in the case of human females, they don't show you engorged genitalia. What they do is they simply beautify themselves more. So that would be an example of applying a biological mechanism to human behavior, in this case, women's clothing.
Feminists must have gone crazy on that.
Oh, there's a very, very long lineup of people who go crazy about this stuff.
And is that universal? I mean, was it overwhelming that was happening?
Oh, absolutely. The effect is unbelievably strong, and it's been documented in many, many different ways. With one of my other graduate students, I looked at what happens to men's testosterone levels when they engage in conspicuous consumption. So in the same way that the peacock shows off by demonstrating that he's got a big tail, with bright colors, he's saying, look, I'm here, despite the fact that this tail will increase the likelihood of my falling prey to a predator, I'm here, choose me as a mate. Well, a Ferrari is the human equivalent
of a peacock tail.
Of a peacock tail.
So tell me why Jeff Bezos would take pictures of his junk and send it out. Have you heard this story?
I have not.
Okay, so Jeff Bezos.
I know of Andy Weiner.
Anthony Weiner. No. Yeah, okay, so you know who Jeff Bezos is.
Of course, the Amazon guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, richest man in the world.
I didn't know that.
He was taking pictures of his junk.
And sending it to?
Of a girl that he wasn't married to. And why would you do that?
That's actually a great question, because it demonstrates how men and women don't always know one another's psychology, right? Because men are very much visually enticed, sexually yes. aroused by visual stimuli, they erroneously think that the same principle will apply to women, right? To the extent that you and I might find a woman with an hourglass figure is very intoxicating. So Jeff Bezos reasons, well, she must be equally aroused by seeing
what's in my
pants, whereas right. she's a lot more aroused by what's in his bank account.
Yeah, what's in his wallet. It is in your pants. It's just not in the front. Dude.
Exactly.
Just not in the front.
Yeah.
So I love this term that you coined, collective Munchausen.
Yeah, you want me to tell you about that?
Yeah.
So that came actually, I'd written a paper in a medical journal back in 2010 on Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Mm-hmm.
Munchausen syndrome is a psychiatric disorder where someone feigns injury or feigns a medical condition mm-hmm. to garner empathy and sympathy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Munchausen syndrome by proxy is where you take someone who's under your care, let's say your biological child, you harm them so that you can garner that sympathy by proxy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started seeing how people were engaging in sort of a victimology hysteria. Is it safe for me to go to school because I'm a woman of color now that Trump is president?
Mm.
And I thought that was a perfect manifestation of this faux victimhood, this Munchausen syndrome applied collectively in a hysterical context. And hence I coined it collective Munchausen.
That had to be popular. How are you still teaching?
I often ask myself that question. That's why politicians who argue that we should get rid of tenure, I'm living proof that you should never do that. Because imagine what would have happened to me if it were easy to simply send me an email and saying, you're saying a lot of stuff that's pissing us off, you're out. They can't do that precisely because I'm protected by tenure.
So you were a guy, you and Jordan Peterson are friends,
right.
And you were doing this long before Jordan Peterson
Indeed.
and speaking out. And he actually called you at the beginning.
Right.
And said, can you help me, dude? I'm entering into your waters here and they're treacherous.
So he contacted me because he had gotten into some hot waters with his position on the gender pronoun issue. He felt that it wasn't appropriate for the government to engage in compelled speech. I mean, sure, he should, if he's a good person, he should address someone by their preferred pronoun, but there shouldn't be the weight of the governmental laws saying that you better do it. And because he took that position in a few YouTube videos that were very popular and mm-hmm. started getting a lot of flack, no academic mm-hmm. would support him. So he reached out to me and said, hey, can we talk? He came on my show, we became friends, and the rest is history.
So why is it that this is happening from so many Canadians? Where Americans are kind of asleep at the switch.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I could think of is that Americans have the protection of the First Amendment. So maybe they're complacent, thinking that
it'll
never go away. You'll always be protected. Whereas maybe we have to be a bit more proactive in repeatedly protecting our freedom of speech because we don't have, regrettably, your protections.
It's amazing because those protections don't seem to matter anymore.
Yeah.
You know, people have to know them to be able to get them to be enforced. And Canada, are you further down the road than we are? Because it feels like we are.
From a political correctness perspective and
all
that. Yeah,
and just crazy out of control.
It's outlandish. I mean, it's especially due to the fact that we have the social justice warrior in chief, Justin Trudeau, as the head of our country. I mean, he epitomizes all of the parasitic, idiotic, moronic ideas that I've been fighting against for 20 plus years, because he is a product of the educational system that brought these idiotic ideas, postmodernism, cultural relativism, moral relativism. Right. So everything that he does now is about gender equity, transgender equity, and so on. And again, I'm a fervent believer that everybody should be free of bigotry, but you don't dish out Nobel Prizes based on whether you ovulate or not.
Right. So. You got in trouble in the parliament because
I did.
Yeah, because you went and you had to testify
yeah.
that there is a difference between men and women, right?
Right. So, yeah. So I actually was invited twice, once to appear in front of the Canadian Senate, and then I gave a lecture on Parliament Hill. In front of the Canadian Senate, I was trying to argue that Bill C-16, which is the bill that would incorporate gender identity and gender gender expression under the hate rubric, I argued, yes, of course we should protect everyone's rights to live a dignified life, but there's a slippery slope here, right? It's very easy for someone in my class who doesn't hear his or her personhood covered to say, hey, Professor Saad is being transphobic because he's only talking about sex differences in his classes. And so I tried to warn them not so much that we shouldn't be trying to protect everybody, but that there are, you know, ill consequences of some of the legislation that was coming. And I was accused of being pro-genocide by one of the senators.
Pro-genocide?
Pro-genocide.
Which you're a Jew that grew up in Lebanon.
That's right.
And so you're pretty clear on...
I'm pretty clear on the ugliness of genocide. And actually, that's I did remind him of my personal history, and that, I think, had him second-guessing his stupidity.
Wow. We are entering a time where truth doesn't seem to matter at all. And because of that, things like the term justice have been turned into social justice. Define the word justice. What is justice?
Well, it's certainly not what the social justice warriors think it is. To me, it's really the protection of individual rights and individual dignity, right? I mean, everybody should be able to pursue their lives free of bigotry, free of institutional, you know, hatred. Someone who grew up in Lebanon as a Jew, I certainly know about that. But we shouldn't be forced to celebrate your unique personhood, right? Transgender people have every right to live dignified lives free of bigotry, but I don't have to walk into class every Wednesday and poll everybody about what their gender pronouns are that day. Mm-hmm. Because, by the way, Harvard University has argued that your gender identity could fluctuate on a daily basis. So Monday I'm male, Tuesday I'm female, Wednesday I'm Gzeer. I mean, right? So it's a level of insanity that could only be explained as a parasitic worm that has entered people's brain and has removed their ability to think clearly. So
what are you on Wednesday again?
Gzeer.
Zier.
Yeah, X-I-R. This is, I think, one of the pronouns where you're non-binary.
Non-binary.
I'm neither male or female.
See, I'm learning. We're all learning here today.
There you go.
Yeah. We're all learning.
My feeling is, am I wrong to think that maybe some of this stuff hasn't hit Texas as hard as New York or...
It's getting
no,
there.
Not as hard as New York, but no.
It is getting here.
I mean, Texas has changed to the point to where... I mean, when you think of Texan history, what do you think of? You're Canadian. What do you think of Texan history?
Independence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there any event that comes to mind? No?
No.
You're Canadian.
Yeah.
The Alamo.
Okay, sure.
Okay. The Alamo. And that's all about really independence. That was saving the Mexicans, trying to fight for the Mexicans to be independent of a tyrant.
Right.
You can't even teach that now because it's oppressive.
Right.
In Texas, you can't teach that. That's nuts. That is absolutely nuts. We've just gone off the deep end. I can't wait to talk to you some more.
Likewise.
So thank you so much for being here.
Cheers.
We're going to take on everything, religion, and all of it in the podcast. Thank
Look
you so much.
It. Cheers.
Yep. God bless.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.